The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 19th of February, 2020. On the podcast today, Kel Van Scraven, co-founder and managing director of KR1. And Kel discusses progress at the company and gives his outlook for cryptocurrencies over the next few years. Plus, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about the coronavirus, the impact, of course, on the economics and the economies around the world. Palladium, who's had a massive run of late, also discusses Visarian and Blue Rock Diamonds. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. And of course, you can see both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Kel Van Scraven, co-founder and managing director of KR1. Ticker there is KR1. It's quite easy to remember on the next there. Kel, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, nice to get you on, because I've had George on, George McDonough, who's obviously the other co-founder, and we've had several chats, and I like the space of cryptocurrency. And before we get into what's happening specifically at the company there, just for people not familiar, just explain what KR1 is about, if you could, Kel.
Yeah, thanks. Well, we're an early stage investment company in decentralized and blockchain technologies. We really allow retail investors access to crypto and the crypto markets in a very safe way, in a tax-efficient way, as you can put your KR1 shares into your ISA. Mm-hmm. So we are, we hold a quite a major portfolio of crypto assets. Some of them are starting to generate yields, and we have several key assets: Bitcoin, Ethereum, Polkadot, Cosmos, and some new emerging crypto assets. These are all tend to be long-term holds, although we do look to get some of our money out when the price is right as soon as we can, mm-hmm. to create liquidity for recycling into the ecosystem.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose, you know, Bitcoin at the moment is quite an interesting price, what's happened here at the moment, because I just tweeted out actually that, there's a moving average called, two moving averages called 50-day and 200-day. When the 50-day crosses the 200-day, it's very bullish. It's called the Golden Cross. Yeah, and Death Cross. And that's just happened on Bitcoin. And the last two times that happened, there's been returns. In fact, the first time it happened in 2015 was like the 6,400% return into the high. And then more recently last year, it was like a 140% return. So it's a bullish indicator. Are you feeling good at the moment for Bitcoin?
Absolutely, yeah. We're feeling pretty strong. The market's definitely starting to wake up. We had a kind of low last year on Bitcoin of about 3,500, around about there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's definitely coming back. Sentiment is really picking up. There's fresh money coming into the market. There are institutions pouring money into the ecosystem now. That started to happen a while ago, actually. Mm-hmm. So we are, you know, pretty confident that the market is gonna come back. A lot of the price action happens in very short space of time. I think Bitcoin last year, the price action happened over 10 days over the whole year. That's the kind of the movement, the violent movement upwards that we saw. Mm-hmm. The rest of the time, it tends to trade sideways, or slightly negatively, or majorly negatively. So price action really is kind of like short, violent movements, and it catches everyone out. This is the thing that happens. Mm. People get kind of surprised when it happens, but it's coming. The halving is in May this year. It's controversial. Some people say it's priced in. But, you know, human nature is a very funny thing, you know. And one of the strongest things we've seen is that when people don't hold the asset and price starts to move, they kind of get much more interest and they want to start holding the asset. Mm-hmm. And we will see that again this year. And the early shoots, we're seeing that now.
Yeah, do you know what's quite interesting? Is people say the halving's priced in, but if you look at the last couple of halvings, the price action has really moved after the halving. It's not just a sub before. Right. I mean, it's really last next few months, it's really moved. And the interest, like you say there, about institutional investment or interest, that's, in my mind, is very interesting because unlike the previous two halvings, you've got now a lot of funds setting up to invest or get exposure to crypto. And I think that'll have a marked difference because, private investor holding money and institutions, it's a different ball game, isn't it? The amount of money that can, institutions can pour into it is phenomenal, isn't it?
They certainly have, yeah. And we've seen a lot more family office money kind of sit on the sidelines and now starting to start to put some of their funds into effect. So, the space is totally changed from where we were even a year ago. Mm-hmm. Institutional sentiment is, they're all talking about it now. It was on their radar slightly. Mm-hmm. But even, there's small indicators like the research is just tripled, quadrupled. You get so much more fund research on this whole ecosystem now. You didn't have that a year ago. A lot more analysis, you just know that when we talk to people, the institutions are involved. They're taking a position already, whether it be small, that is increasing. So once the price, the price is kind of the lever for the whole thing to start moving. And it tends to be 6 months after the halving, the price action really starts to flow, shoot up. Mm-hmm. So we expect by autumn this year that there should be major movements in the market. Mm. The market cap should be, much, much higher from where we are now and for all the assets in the market. Mm-hmm. And institutions that have kind of almost set up ready to put money in will start putting more money in. So we're in a much, much more mature place than we were even last year.
The funny thing is, people were questioning Bitcoin itself, its validity as an asset. But the thing is, when it becomes the best performing asset in the last 10 years, then that in itself validates its existence. And then what you have is that all these money managers who want to achieve the best returns for their clients and for themselves, of course, will need to get exposure to it. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it, really?
It is, yeah. I mean, it's because it's been marketed as the top-performing asset of those last 10 years, then that's the most amazing marketing it could have had,
Yeah, they can't afford not to get exposure, can they, really?
Exactly. So they got caught out with it. It was too early. It was too risky. But now it's matured, and it's matured enough for them to get involved. So the price is going to run again, and they're starting to put a little bit in to get exposure to it. So some of the crypto assets, there'll be like a top 10 index effect of the money managers putting money into the top 10, top 20 crypto assets. All those will have major price action. Just because they're in that index. Mm-hmm. There is the money managers are focused on it now. Because it's 24/7 liquid global markets, then that's not on traditional markets. It's a kind of different, it's a much more wild ride, but it has calmed down a lot. So I think these money managers are starting to come in a big way.
The thing is, one thing that puts people off, you get the Bitcoin bulls. They're always, doesn't matter what happens, they're bullish on it.
Yes.
But there's always this worry about, regulation coming in. And, I think there's something, one of the Americans, was it Munchen, said something recently about Bitcoin? What's your thoughts on that? Because I've had people on Twitter say to me, it doesn't matter, you can't regulate, you can't shut it down, it's decentralized, no one really owns it. But they can make it hard, can't they, for it to be traded? They can do everything they can in their power, regulations, to make it almost legal, can't they?
They can, yeah, exactly. It's not, they can't control the way it flows around the network, which is the internet. So the way you send a Bitcoin around or a fraction of it around the internet, you can't stop that. Mm. What you can stop and regulate is the exit point, which is the way you cash it out. And that's really this kind of Achilles heel of it. So regulation was a big thing last year. That was going to be the year all the regulation was sorted and we can move on. That's still ongoing and it will be ongoing for a while. But, you know, all the noises are really good. You know, even in the UK, the FCA have embraced these new assets. They had a white paper released last summer. So, you know, it was a positive thing. FCA are going to allow some kind of regulation of these assets. The SEC in the States, these conversations are well down the line now, and that even again last year we weren't even here with it. It was super early then. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but crypto has to fit into our model. It can't just live outside in this kind of shadow economy forever. Mm-hmm. It has to come in.
Yeah,
and you know that is at the kind of way our economy works. It can't just sit outside of it. So, you know, the regulation will be maturing again, you know, as we move forward, and it's a good thing for the space.
Well, take us into your price of your stock has gone up a little quite impressively in the last few months, and is this just down to Bitcoin, or is there other things going on there?
A little bit of each, actually. I think it was crazily oversold anyway. I think it went down to 4.5p. You know, we've got a lot of really high quality assets in the portfolio that just wasn't reflected in the share price at all. Mm-hmm. Kind of still isn't really. But we've been very active in recent months with more news releases and more investor activity. So we've been putting more effort and resource into that, and that's kind of really showing a little bit with the share price movements. Investors are starting to understand what we're doing, you know, what we're holding, you know, what our plans are, what our vision is. Some quite big stuff coming out. The Polkadot investment that we did is our biggest one. We put a million US into that. That's coming onto the market quite soon, and that's just a yield generating asset as well, so that'll create some new revenue for us alongside our Atom revenue, which will do six figures in that just alone this year. So, you know, we've got a nice potential exit coming up, plus some revenue as well. So, we're looking pretty strong on that side. So, yeah, investors are kind of picking up on this, and we've got more investors asking what exactly we hold and what asset. We have a lot more of that happening. So it's just kind of more awareness of what is in our portfolio, and those retail investors are doing their own analysis and trying to value it in a way. So it's a twin thing. Yeah, it's understanding what we've got, what we're doing, and also the crypto market. We kind of rise with that as well and fall with that as well. So yeah, the rise is definitely having an impact on our share price.
Yeah. Well, it's a good time to have some big news coming out in the next few months, I assume. But what's your most recent? I mean, because everyone gets excited about the most recent investment. What's the most recent investment you've undertaken?
Well, we've just seen the release of the Edgeware mainnet, which is a Polkadot ecosystem service, mm-hmm. And that's pretty exciting. That's kind of got Ethereum-like qualities to it because it's a smart contract. Service in that new ecosystem, and that basically allows contracts to be executed across different blockchains, which we haven't seen before. So that's a new exciting thing. So cross blockchain interoperability is the kind of theme of this year, really, where we're going to see the free movement of contract data and transactions across any blockchain. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't happened before. So this could lead to an explosion of different services and then sort of opening up like free trade across the world rather than nation states just trading internally. So it's like global trade instead of nation trade. So that's going to happen this year, starting this year and into next year. And that's going to increase the kind of opportunities that we can see. So it's rather than just working a stable coin in Ethereum like Maken is doing, it'll be like there'll possibly be a stable coin that works across all blockchains, which just open up more opportunities. That's kind of Edgeware has just released its mainnet, and we're involved in that. And we've actually got some. Obviously, we have to RNS our investments, but so I can't talk about anything that we're doing. But we have got some really exciting news coming up with some new investments.
Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff. And you're heavily focused on the emerging space of decentralized finance or DeFi. Tell us a bit about that, if you could, how that's involved.
DeFi is really, it's been around since 2017, DeFi, but the term was only coined last year.
Yeah.
So when you tend to get a term, people tend to kind of understand it a lot more. So we've really been investing in DeFi since 2017 with our third investment was Melonport. That's a decentralized asset management platform. Mm-hmm. And so we've been heavily involved in investing in several other DeFi projects, such as Nexus Mutual, which is a decentralized insurance service. And there's Argent, which is a wallet. And there's several others that we've invested in. We've actually been one of the most active investors in the DeFi space, you know, around the world, really. Mm. So it's basically a new ecosystem for decentralized financial applications and services that goes from asset management to insurance to lending. And it's really exploding. I mean, there's so much value being created in it. I think there's like nine figures now. It was 900 million a few weeks ago, and it's crossed, you know, it's past the nine figure mark, which is a massive amount. And that's kind of got all the headlines going. So people are really starting to understand that this is a thriving sort of mini ecosystem, which has got a potential to really change things.
Yeah, and do you think it'll be, you know, essentially in the future, this will be the mainstay? Do you think this in the majority of people will be, you know, interacting with decentralized finance like this?
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely, yeah, and Bitcoin is DeFi, so it's really started with Bitcoin and it's the continuation. So yeah, absolutely. Financial services will be disrupted with these services. Once you take the middleman out, and then you can do lots of exciting things. So yeah, absolutely. There'll be, you know, we're still early on it, so most people won't really be getting their hands into it right now. But, you know, as time goes on and these services mature, then guaranteed most of the people listening to this will be using some of these services in the future. Mm-hmm. And we're investing in them now. And we're seeing some of them. Like Nexus Mutual has got 2 million of cover in it already from a standing start sort of from the autumn, really. Yeah. So it's been, you know, these things move very quickly.
Yeah, the thing is, what it will be, I mean, people are now saying, you know, Bitcoin is digital gold, and you can sort of see that. People don't, you know, use gold to pay for things, and people are not using really Bitcoin to pay for things, so because it's not fit for purpose like that. Well, it was a 7 transactions per second or something like that. It's not as good as Visa, not as fast. So what do you think is going to be the actual, I know they've got a Lightning network and all that stuff, but so what is going to be the currency then, of the digital currency? Or don't you think that'll happen? It'll just, like China's going towards digital currency, other countries are, you know, I mean, how will people be transacting in the future? Will it be with one big strong currency, or will it be just with individuals, you know, sort of?
The answer is always more complicated than a straightforward one. So there'll be central bank digital currencies called CBDCs. Mm. And you'll have consensus-based digital currencies, which are Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other sorts of crypto. So you'll have nation-state currency and sort of global free-flowing consensus-based digital currencies. So you'll have two variations, but they'll both work together. Mm-hmm. And they'll both be able to be used in these decentralized financial services products. So there will be many. So there won't just be one. Bitcoin is kind of still like the Visa, or everyone knows it and understands it. But you know, there will be. You know, when in our sort of Western societies, there will be sort of lending and sort of much more efficient digital asset management type platforms. That there'll be ways of managing wealth which are much more efficient with this technology, and those are some of the early front runners of this movement. In the undeveloped world, there's going to be banking, insurance, lending. all those things are going to be new products to people that haven't had them before. And that's kind of more revolutionary to the underdeveloped world. So the developed world will use crypto in managing its wealth and assets in a much more efficient way. And in the sort of third world, it'll be used as a way of creating new economic freedoms. Yeah. So it's kind of like a twin parallel. It's different in different places.
Yeah.
But yeah. So it's kind of like a nuanced answer there.
But I suppose any adoption of cryptocurrencies or digital currencies or by central governments, unless they regulate against Bitcoin, is good for Bitcoin, because Bitcoin, like, what, 70% of all cryptos is transacted through Bitcoin, so it's the main dog. It's like the reserve, isn't it?
Exactly,
it's like,
yeah.
It's like the US dollar of crypto. Yeah, it's like, so it'll be good for that, unless they regulate against it, surely.
Exactly. So that's why Libra released we wanted to release last year, but it couldn't, because it's actually quite a fundamental shift in economic flow, as it were.
Yeah.
So nation states are going to be releasing their own digital currency. I think Bank of England came out with a study saying if you add your own digital currency, you add 3% to your GDP, which is absolutely massive. You won't get that anywhere else.
Yeah.
So, there's a massive efficiency by having your own digital currency. So there's a race that's on. Yeah, China kind of
So what do they say? The Bank of England said having their own digital currency will add 3% to GDP. Is that what they said?
Correct, yeah. Yes, by the efficiencies from saving on cash
why,
collection.
Why are they doing it then? Why aren't they doing it? It's like,
well, exactly, yeah. They are, everyone's got their own research plans in play. This is what's happening. I mean, the Bank of England put a white paper out 2 years ago with it, or even 3 years ago. The FCA put a white paper out last year about crypto assets. So they're all on it. But they're all kind of, Libra really put a rocket up everyone, because it kind of, everyone got scared that Facebook are going to make this move to create this currency that could actually be the leader in this kind of new global race. So that sparks everything, and the Chinese have responded to Libra, and my bet and our bet is that all these other nation states are accelerating their plans for their own projects, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Digital currency.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Keld. Yeah. Well, listen, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing at KR1, but are not yet following the story, just give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
That's a very good question. Firstly, our track record is second to none. We have long-term investments in our portfolio with AAA assets in them. We're on the NEX market, so anyone can be a shareholder. So we are a public company, fully transparent and open. And in a quite complex technology space, we are kind of like a simple asset, as it were. Mm-hmm. And also you can put your KR1 shares into a tax-efficient ISA, which is brilliant. And the third reason is that we're really at the forefront of this emergent space. And there's really no one doing what we're doing in the UK. And we're providing investors the ability to get into this new exciting space.
Marvellous stuff. Cal, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much, fella.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You're right, John.
Yes, I'm good, thanks. It's an interesting world out there.
It must be nice to come back to a rainy old London from South Africa, sun and everything. It must be lovely to be welcomed home by the rain, the floods, the awful weather, isn't it?
Well, I got completely drenched on my bicycle last night within about 2 minutes of leaving the office, which is my fault for leaving so late. But it's refreshing to feel the English rain from time to time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you know what? Talking about recently, you know, the coronavirus and the effect. We don't know what effect it'll have. We can see now it's affecting supply chains. Apple will miss its sales, which is quite, you know, Apple, the biggest tech company in the world. We've got Japan citing supply chains breaking down, and some analysts saying they're going to recession. So it's the third biggest economy in the world. So these are very real economic impacts from coronavirus. I don't think it's not as scary on a health side, because only, 2.6% of people are dying of those who catch it. It's just we haven't got a vaccine and it's in China. That's the problem, isn't it? And do you know what? Just what I saw recently that they reckon oil demand is going to be dropping in this quarter just because of China. China accounts for 14% of total global consumption and about 57% of consumption growth in 2019. So it's having an effect. And things are going. But I did notice recently gold is up to a sort of just broken $1,600 and palladium's just going nuts, isn't it?
Look, the virus is having very substantial impact, and how it impacts consumer demand is yet to be seen. But there'll be some positives and lots of negatives, I'm sure. I was talking to a director of a major UK manufacturer yesterday. They say they thought their supply chain was relatively secure. They also manufacture in China, which they've had to stop. But they are now having problems because components that are made in the West that they thought weren't linked to China, they now discover have parts within them that are subject to Chinese manufacturing and therefore are going to have problems. So they've reduced their workforce to, I think it's a four-day week. It is likely they might have to reduce that further because there are critical parts in components for them and probably for all automotive manufacturers that are only made in China. And it's very hard to get Western manufacturers to start remaking these things, to start ramping up production again. So I think we're going to see an awful lot of factories go on to part-time working and then possibly outright closure if China doesn't get the supply chains going again, because there's lots of containers in the wrong places. Lorry drivers are not allowed to cross regional boundaries. There's a lot of people under lockdown. And so China is grinding to a halt. There are people in China saying that Japan's not taking this seriously and maybe they're going to have the next big issues. Let's hope that the virus remains contained relatively well within China, and that when the weather warms up, that the virus outbreak is sort of, shall we say, reduced substantially, which is what happened with SARS. But we need a good warm hot spring and a hot summer to do that.
Well, do you know what? I mean, there's more news out today about Jaguar Land Rover. They're flying back their parts in suitcases from China because they can't get parts out. They say they've got 2 weeks left before they run out of Chinese parts. So yeah, I mean, are people taking this seriously? You know, I mean, the economics, the markets just seem to be shrugging it off, don't they?
Well, manufacturers, as I say, are now discovering that components that are made in Europe also rely on parts made, smaller components made in China. And so, yes, I think there's going to be an awful lot of people flying around with suitcases full of LEDs, for example, other bits and pieces. I mean, with Jaguar Land Rover, I think it was key fobs. It's an important thing when you buy a car to have the key fob these days. Yeah. So, everyone is impacted and the world is going to have to look really carefully at how it manages supply chains going forwards.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I did note recently we've had Neil Ricketts from Fasarin on the podcast quite a few times, and you're now there. Is it joint broker, I think?
Yes, we are joint broker and nomad to the company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, there's been a lot of controversy over Fasarin. Neil's come on, he was quite active on Twitter, and people, when you do it, and CEOs do that, they get a lot of flack, and they get trolls as well. And I suggest to Neil, ignore them. Don't go on Twitter so much. And he hasn't been on it for a while. But the trouble is the share price now is grinding down. We've had a lot of, you know, MOUs. Graphene is a very exciting space. Of course it is. A lot of MOUs, a lot of letters of intent. But seemingly, this, I mean, of course, with a new material like this, it's going to take a long time, a lot of due diligence by companies to actually incorporate it in their products. But what's your thoughts on Vesarion then, John?
Well, we've been following graphite and graphene for some years. We have a number of clients that are working on production of graphene, not just Vesarion now, but other companies that have come at it from the mining and the graphite end and are now producing specialist anodes for lithium ion batteries and for other types of lithium batteries. And so it's something that we've been working on in the background for some years. Yes, graphene is a wonder material. It's going to take time for manufacturers to incorporate graphene into their production processes. On the one hand, it's incredibly simple. You add a bit of graphene into something, and it seems to improve. It improves the strength, the electrical conductivity, the thermal conductivity of just about anything that it sticks itself to. Talga Resources, for example, are running two major trials on a graphene in paint, which they've painted onto the bottoms of large ships, and those ships hopefully are experiencing less friction as they go through the oceans as we speak. So there's so many different applications. I was with the company when they were talking to a major producer of something, and so we know that there is enormous interest in the product, but it just takes time to go from the initial conversation to reality, where the product is being incorporated on a daily basis into those products. And there will be huge added value. There will be significant revenues to come from this, royalties, revenues, and other benefits. And Vesarion is bang in the middle of it.
Yeah. Okay, interesting times. Marvellous stuff. Anything else? Any other company news, John?
Blue Rock announced a nicely oversubscribed placing today at £1.9 million in there. They'll more than double production on the improvements that are planned, and that will reduce costs quite nicely. So they were doing quite well anyway in South Africa through the second half. It's run by Mike Houston, who became quite well known when he turned around Shanta Gold. So he's a good processing man. He's got a sensible mine manager working with him. So it's a big turnaround for Blue Rock, and the diamonds that come out are 90% gem quality, which is brilliant. The values are excellent. We've been looking at about $430 a carat over the last year, and that includes some exceptional stones in it. So that's what as production ramps up, we will look forward to seeing more of these very good quality diamonds to hopefully lift the average price.
Marvellous stuff. John, anything else?
I think that's the major news for now. Yeah. On the one hand, the world is an uncertain place, but on the other hand, the mining companies will continue doing what they do and focusing on their costs, and we just got to hope the commodity prices, I think what we'll see is commodity prices will go up in places like the US and Europe, because there will be supply chain issues about getting, you know, raw copper and zinc metal and things like that from out of China. So I think there are going to be big premiums in local jurisdictions in the US and in Western Europe.
Yeah. Interesting to see yesterday, a quick one, Mike Henry, BHP CEO, said they need more copper and more nickel, and they're prepared to get rid of their coal assets for the right price.
Well, we know that nickel is going to see huge growth in demand because there's so much nickel in a lithium-ion battery. Mm. It's more weight of nickel than anything else in there. In fact, the two key constituents are nickel and graphite, trying not to say graphene, because you're probably going to use some graphene in the better performing batteries going forwards. Mm-hmm. So for us, the whole battery metal revolution is going to drive demand for nickel hydroxide, which you can make from nickel metal, but it's better if you just produce the hydroxide directly, and graphite, as well as lithium. So it's exciting. It was the Western manufacturers are looking to invest some $300 billion into new gigafactories and that whole lithium ion factory supply chain. It's the most phenomenal investment.
Yeah, marvelous stuff, John. Thanks for that. We'll speak to you next week.
Look forward to it.
Okay, time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Dev Clever Holdings. It's up 1.28% at 3.95 pence. At four, Sunrise Resources, down 40% to 0.125 pence. At three, Novasic, again, down 17.3% to 126.5. At two, Cobra Resources, down 6.94% to 1675 pence. And number one most followed company, big rise yesterday, was Tertiary Minerals, of course, down 50% day to 0.39 pence. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Zenith Energy Holdings in company, and that's joint with Audioboom Sales, a review of strategic operations, formal sale process. At four, Salt Lake Potash, binding offtake with Mitsui and Co. At three, Sunrise Resources, final results. At two, Big Dish, directed dealings. At one, Stars, dick of their new agreement with Cube Monk. Sounds like a nice guy. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.